This week on the Bonfire Podcast, I'll be covering Larian saying that Baldur's Gate 3 development is done, EA giving BioWare some help, hopefully, new Xbox hardware being leaked, and much more. I am your host, Morgan, aka Bon, and this is a podcast about video game news, reviews, rumors, and speculation. Before we get started, please subscribe to the Bon Diesel YouTube channel, hit the like button, and leave a comment with your feedback or questions for the next episode. If you prefer, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform and leave a review on Spotify or iTunes. Thank you to everyone who supports my content on Patreon, Twitch, and YouTube, with a special thanks to producer-level patron Hassan. If you're interested in supporting this podcast, please consider checking out those platforms in the link in the description of the show. This was an interesting week. No big blockbuster announcements or anything, at least not in my opinion. But we did get some interesting leaks, some rumors, some updates on existing games. I have a light rebranding. If you're watching the video version, you'll see the slightly updated logo for the show right up here. Or if you're on the podcast platforms, you should notice a change in the logo and a very slight change of the episode art. So just fiddling, messing around. I like dabbling with these things. If you've been around long enough, you know that every about 2 or 3 months I change something. So probably not great for brand recognition, but I also changed the name of the podcast last year. So rip the EchoCast. Getting into some gaming news, we'll kick it off with Xbox. A new Xbox dev kit was noted in some South Korean documents. This was notable to me in a few ways, but the main one being that the only other two dev kits that have been in this system that this was found was for the Series X and the One X, and maybe even more notably, those consoles were both released within 6 months of getting filed. One of them was 2 months. I believe that was the One X. The other one was the Series X. That's interesting. To add on to this story, my prediction is this is either a mid-gen refresh that is a secret. Maybe. I don't know. It's the stream box that was rumored a few years ago. It was even in Phil Spencer's background in some of his COVID era streams he did, or a rumored handheld. The pushback on the handheld is that just today, on Friday, Jez Corden reported that Xbox is prototyping a dockable handheld. And so some people are going to instantly attach that to the South Korean thing. I wouldn't, because if they're only prototyping it, they are definitely not submitting dev kits to studios. That wouldn't make any sense at this point. So it actually, to me, rules out that it's the handheld. If you don't remember, but just a few weeks ago, or I guess a couple months ago now, the rumors were that the next-gen Xbox and a lower-tier console, the handheld, would possibly be coming as soon as 2026. So that, in my opinion, kind of leaves a secret mid-gen refresh or the stream box. I don't know if the stream box would need a dev kit for developers. Maybe it would, so they can test things like latency and things like that with their games and try to tune things. Maybe. That just doesn't sound right to me. The most likely thing, even though it kind of seems the least likely, is that it's a secret mid-gen refresh. I find it really hard to believe that those leaked ABK acquisition documents wouldn't have had something like this, because it didn't. If you remember, all it had was plans for a diskless Series X, which wouldn't require a new dev kit, and some vague plans for the next-gen consoles. So those documents, as far as we could tell, didn't actually have anything outlining a mid-gen refresh. And just last year, Phil Spencer said he doesn't think that the Series X needs a mid-gen refresh. This could be some hopium, copium kind of things. For myself, someone who does prefer Xbox, and probably would get a mid-gen refresh, and will definitely get the next-gen console, you know, you don't want to see PlayStation put out this PS5 Pro, which is seems like it's basically a certainty to come late this year or early next. With these, like, kind of impressive numbers, it really seems like it's going to be kind of bluster. It's going to be like a 10% raise in actual capability. But for some games, that's going to make a lot more games actually play 4K 60 FPS. So that's not a bad thing, especially with their DLSS copycat tech. Maybe. And so, you know, I, and I'm sure other Xbox fans, are hoping that we aren't just going to, you know, wait for the next-gen console for Xbox. The reason that may not be a bad thing is because it does set up a situation where, say, Sony puts out this PS5 Pro in early 2025, and Xbox puts out their next-gen console in 2026, you're probably not seeing a PS6 until at least 27. Maybe even 28. And so you may run into, with Xbox, another 360 PS3 situation where 360 puts out some really good hardware, despite the Red Ring of Death, puts out some good hardware, hopefully has some good games that come out with it, and it may have a year or even 2 year head start on PlayStation in this generation, you know, war that I think Xbox would be happy to get out of, where they may kind of dominate. Now, of course, once the PS6 comes out, it's probably going to have substantially more powerful tech in it. And so then maybe you'd be, you know, we'll figure that stuff out later. But as for the South Korean thing, it's interesting. Like I said before, the notable thing was, is these other two filings for consoles that came out, you know, they came out pretty quickly. During the whole drama, you know, update that Xbox had to do because a bunch of idiots on Twitter couldn't control themselves with rumors about the cross-platform games, Sarah Bond, who is in charge of the hardware development for Xbox moving forward, said that they have exciting hardware news coming as soon as this holiday. And we have June of this summer coming up, which is typically the big, you know, whatever you want to call it, E3, Keel E3, IGN showcase, whatever it's going to be now. I'm going to call it E3 time forever. But, you know, they could announce something there. We are also expecting a haptic feedback Xbox controller. So that wouldn't obviously be this dev kit. This dev kit's a huge mystery to me. It's very, very interesting because, again, I don't think the digital Series X would need that, because that should just be a Series X. I don't think the streaming box would need it. I don't think it's the next-gen console, because they wouldn't put a dev kit out this far ahead. I don't think. But then they really seem sure that they weren't going to do a mid-gen. I don't know. My assumption is that they prototype out and they plan for all of these things, even if they don't go through. Like, it seems like that streaming box was going to happen and then didn't. But yeah, I'm curious. I think it's an interesting story. I suspect we'll know within the next couple of months more about it via leaks, or because they'll probably announce something this June or this summer about what their plans are for the rest of the year. I'm just curious. I'm very curious about what they're going to do. I would love to see, I would love to see them make some moves. It's been, it really sucks because, and I think this has been the case for a while for Xbox, but the news cycle is just kind of against them in a lot of ways. I've really tried, you know, and I really did push back against the Xbox tax, conspiracies and all of that for a long time. And while I do still generally push back on, you know, things being that blatant, I do think it's kind of hard not to acknowledge that stories about Xbox just get treated different. And maybe that's because they're in third place. Maybe that's because of bias or whatever. I don't know. I think one of the interesting parts of it is that they're in third place, but Xbox is still, like, doing really good, right? It's very interesting, especially when we saw those leaked documents from the ABK acquisition. They're extremely profitable. They make a lot of money for how much they're spending. They aren't making as much as, you know, Nintendo and PlayStation, but they're viable. And I think that gets lost in the conversation sometimes when, because they aren't beating PlayStation, because they aren't beating Nintendo, there's this attitude that they're not sustainable and they're going to shut down. But that's not true. They are sustainable. They're, in fact, I think their actual profitability on the money they make is better than PlayStation's. PlayStation makes more because they sell more hardware and more games. But the actual, you know, cost to income ratio there, if I remember correctly, was better than Sony's. And I don't think it was far off of Nintendo's, which is insane because Nintendo doesn't discount their games and they're still selling 7-year-old hardware at what has to be a huge margin for a console. I'm sure it's still not great, but I don't know. I think it's interesting. So I think anything that could be good news for them is good to get out there. You know, release date for games, new hardware, plans for the future, all of that stuff is good for Xbox and Game Pass announcements, which hopefully they have some big ones coming sooner than later. So one of those stories that I think can get pushed in a negative way was something that came up a couple days ago, but this Innotria, The Last Song. This is what, as far as I can tell, is like a indie or double A game that's being developed and was initially meant to come out on all of the platforms. And they announced a couple days ago that they would not be continuing with their Xbox release and that they'd be focusing on Xbox or on the PC and PlayStation. This obviously turned into a big console war thing, which is weird because, one, no one heard of this game before this happened. No one cared about this game. This was going to be some ho-hum, you know, indie game that probably came to Game Pass if it came out on the Xbox, that no one was going to pay attention to. Oddly enough, ID at Xbox, which is one of their social media, like official social media accounts, actually showcased this game at one point. I think it's interesting because there's this kind of, there was this attitude around this announcement that Xbox isn't worth putting games out on. And that's probably not it. That's why you see all the big third-party games come to Xbox. There's, you know, while Sony has sold, what, like 60 or 70 million PS5s, it seems like Xbox has still sold 25 or 30 million Xboxes, Series S's and X's. Probably more S's by a substantial margin, but still, that's a lot of people to sell games to. So it's a very, you know, lucrative thing to go into and to spend money on, but for a lower cost or tier, I don't like saying tier, but for a smaller dev, it, and especially if they don't have a Game Pass deal, it may not be worth it to put it out on the smallest platform, right? The one with the smallest install base. And that's where I think Game Pass is probably the big difference. If this game wasn't coming to that, if they don't have the money to port this to all three platforms, Switch, PlayStation, and Xbox, or I think it's actually PlayStation and PC, you may cut the one that's the smallest, and that is the Xbox. There's no denying that. But I think if we found out that Madden wasn't coming to Xbox next year, that would be a story. That would be a really, really bad sign for Xbox. But Innotria, The Last Song, not coming to Xbox is probably a money issue on that studio side, way less so than it is an Xbox issue. But I digress, and I put away my Xbox fanboyism. Moving over to PlayStation, the only big story I had this week for them was that they are pausing PS VR 2 production. This comes after rumors recently that, one, it's not sold hardly at all. You know, just acknowledgement that they've only released one first-party game for this hardware. The third thing being that it was rumored recently, and I think it was even confirmed, that they are going to be putting out the ability to play the PSVR 2 through your PC. Now, there was some concern I remember seeing about that, where some people are concerned that you won't be using your PC's hardware to run the VR headset because it doesn't have the internal CPUs and stuff. It uses the hardware. That's why you plug it into a PlayStation 5. There was some concern I saw from people saying that, well, hold on, it may not use your PC. It may stream. It may use an app on your PC to stream games from their cloud services through the VR, which would be a nightmare. You don't want to stream VR games. It's just not going to work. It's going to be awful. The latency will make that a bad situation for anyone who tries to do it. So we'll see how that goes. What's funny about this is that for all intents and purposes, I've only heard good things about the PSVR 2. I've heard the like haptic controllers, which have that kind of, you know, DualSense tech in them, are amazing, that they're very, very, very good. And that the headset, that the fidelity of the headset is extremely good, that the hardware is legitimately awesome. But PlayStation just put it out to die. It's a very, like, it makes you wonder why they even did it. Like, why did they even make the hardware if they had zero intentions of supporting it? Even though I am an Xbox preferrer, I still want to see PlayStation make smart moves. And it's just another one of those moves they've made where you kind of feel, and this is probably a lot of bias coming out, it's so strange how it seems like Sony is like that guy who's really successful because he's like really good at one thing, but he's kind of bad at everything else. Where Xbox is like that guy who's just trying to climb the ladder, who is the hardest worker, who does everything the right way and just hasn't gotten that break, or was too little too late, or has flaws that have, you know, kept them from really, you know, surpassing. But it is just weird how it kind of seems like PlayStation is really being kept afloat by the work that they've done in the last gen or two, when, you know, where they aren't really releasing games and they're doing things like this with PSVR 2. You know, and they're maybe, you know, not making the best consumer protection moves and things like that, yet they're just still wildly successful. They're still doubling up Xbox, right? It's really interesting. And it's why I've always said, and it's why I continue to say, people should want Xbox to be successful and to genuinely compete with PlayStation in some capacity, right? Because, and this should be really a thing for PlayStation preferrers, right? You don't want PlayStation to be the only game in town. I'm telling you, you don't want that. Because even though they already aren't the only game in town, they act like it a lot of the time by doing some really stupid stuff and really shady stuff, at least in my opinion. And that's with competition, somewhat, right? So, you know, for the people who bought this PSVR 2 and, you know, spent $500 on a headset and $500 on a console, and then they've barely gotten any support, like, I genuinely feel bad for them. Like, because it's good hardware. It should be getting support, but it's not, and it's weird. But we'll see what happens. Over to Nintendo, the only story I had for that is kind of another call to the eventual end of the Switch generation. Smash Brothers Ultimate is getting its final event on March 22nd, which is today when I'm recording this. And that, again, is just another one of those kind of clues in the wind of, you know, while Nintendo has been pretty tight-lipped about the fact that new hardware is coming, I guess not till 2025 now, we're going to start seeing that, you know, they're extremely successful and they're very long run, you know, games like Mario Kart, I think 8, Super Smash Brothers and so on, will start, you know, not getting updates because they're phasing them out and they're probably about to release new editions of those. So I'm really curious to how this next Switch is going to play. I think it's almost a Sony situation to a point where there's so many Switches, there's so many Nintendo fans, that even if Nintendo, if this next console is kind of underwhelming, it's still going to sell 100 million units. It's going to sell a crap ton of games because it's the only place you can play them legally, as we now know. And like, I'm expecting the hardware to be not great, personally. Because, you know, the rumors, and I believe them, and even Digital Foundry kind of alluded to this recently, that there's a really good chance that Nintendo's hardware got finalized like 2, maybe 3+ years ago. And yeah, it's going to be NVIDIA, and yeah, it's going to have DLSS. But what if it can only do like DLSS 1 or 2? What if it can't even come close to the current versions of it? And that's going to get to a point where, you know, the excitement about that is that that means that in theory, there'd be lots and lots of third-party games that would be able to release on Nintendo, because you could use DLSS to get at least somewhat playable frame rates and resolutions. But if the tech gets so old that the newer games don't even support it, oh, it's going to be interesting. Now, that said, if that happens, say that the NVIDIA tech that's in the next Switch can only do DLSS 1.5 or 2 or whatever, because there's going to be really quickly 20, 30, 40, 50 million units of that, you'll start seeing those games implementing that support because you want the sales on that console. So we'll see. I'm very curious about how Nintendo's going to handle things and the hardware we're going to be seeing in the next year or so. Moving on to non-platform stories, we have Sven Vinke, I'm going to say, CEO of Larian Studios, confirmed at GDC, which was a pretty good week for stories coming out of GDC, the Game Developers Conference, that there will be no new content, DLC, or sequel for Baldur's Gate 3, making it very clear that they were giving Dungeons & Dragons back to its owners, to Hasbro and Wizards of the Coast, to find new partners to work on those games with, and that they are moving on. He specifically stated that their next game will be original IP of some kind, and that the game after that they're hoping will be the biggest game they've ever made. So pretty big stuff there. He did say afterwards and in recent days and hours that they are still working on Baldur's Gate 3 technically. They are still, you know, bug fixing. They are still working on the mod tools so people can put in their own content, and that they're still working on more in-game cinematics. After that, even more details came out that specifically they're going to be putting in evil endings, which should be interesting, and I would be curious to actually do an evil playthrough if that's the case. But yeah, heartbroken. No new content, no DLC, and no Baldur's Gate 4, at least not from Larian. That's interesting. I'm of two minds about it. Baldur's Gate 3, especially with the epilogue, really does tie itself up well. A decent playthrough of all three acts getting to the end is at least 50 or 60 hours, and realistically closer to 100 if you're really doing everything the way you should. So maybe it doesn't need more. The DLC, the best way they could have done it was to maybe it would like activate during a playthrough, not at the end, because I just don't think you should really extend their stories. They can't really level up past 12. They've talked about this before, where in Dungeons and Dragons, once you get past level 12, you're starting to talk about like demigod levels of power, and even level 12 is extremely powerful in the world of Dungeons and Dragons. So, you know, that was made unrealistic. Maybe the biggest bummer was that Sven confirmed that they actually started working on DLC late last year, and he canceled it because no one was into it. He said that after he canceled it, multiple devs have come to him thanking him. He said just no one's heart seemed to be in it, and that they probably want to work on something new. You'll see this with lots of studios. My personal experience has been with Ubisoft Massive. Many of the developers who worked on Division 1 and 2 were the same people, which means that lots of those people worked on that franchise for like 10 years. And you know, despite the community being kind of rough, despite those games having their trials and tribulations, even if a game goes really well, like Baldur's Gate 3, it's still hard to work on one IP for that long. And that's why like a lot of those Division devs are now working on Star Wars Outlaws, and that's probably really exciting for them. I think Larian's in a similar situation where they see, we put out this amazing game, it's gotten all these awards, it's been heralded. One, we could probably do too much. We could probably overstay our welcome, right? Or we just want to do something different. And I think that's okay. I'm not happy about it. I want more experiences with Karlach and Shadowheart and Lazelle and my own Tav and so on. But that's not what they're doing. And that's okay. This does spark a question from Master Prime, where they ask the question saying in the Discord, favorite inside joke in the games community. For me, it's reluctantly that people have just call Shadowheart in Baldur's Gate 3 Shart. There's definitely some Mass Effect ones and stuff like that as well. But for a character I really like in the Baldur's Gate, them shortening her name to Shart will always be a thing I think is funny in an annoying way. On to the next story, we have Connie Booth, formerly of PlayStation, joins EA as a new general manager for BioWare, Motive, and Cliffhanger Studios. Connie Booth, I remember when she, I talked about it last year when she left PlayStation. She had been there for 30 years. She's given a lot of credit for helping to guide their most successful first-party franchises, including Spider-Man 1 and 2, The Last of Us, Ghost of Tsushima, and a bunch more, like Uncharted, and a bunch of others. So I assume her role there was, it's a role you see in other studios where it's, they're kind of like a liaison between a handful of studios under a publisher and the publisher, and will typically be the person who kind of greenlights or shuts down things in those studios. I'm under the impression they're typically in charge of more studios. So her being in charge, you know, of her experience of just these three studios, Motive and Cliffhanger being relatively small, and then BioWare being BioWare, I think it's pretty interesting. What I hope it means, it's a dedication to BioWare and these other two studios and what they're doing to, you know, to hire someone of her resume to be the overseer for those studios. To me, it hopefully signals a, you know, an amount of how seriously they're taking, you know, the things those studios are working on. Notably, BioWare is working on Dragon Age Dreadwolf, expected out this year, and the next Mass Effect game. Motive is working on an Iron Man game, and Cliffhanger is working on the Black Panther game. I'm hesitantly positive about this. I think this should be a good thing. If you look at her resume, it's, you know, you certainly hope that her influence there is going to be good. The honest truth is her influence over a game like Dreadwolf, which is expected probably late this summer or fall, is probably going to be pretty minimal. Though if you see that game get delayed to next year, which it could, I can almost guarantee it would be on her direction. But all the rumors most recently have been that that's probably not going to happen. Her influence is probably going to be the most noticed with Mass Effect. And that's because part of the announcement here, there was a big focus. I believe it was the person she is reporting to at EA made a specific note about how a big part of her hiring is to specifically help BioWare and specifically on the franchises of Dragon Age and Mass Effect. So almost certainly a big part of why she's being hired is to help guide the next Mass Effect. I can pretty much guarantee it. And if her guidance can help that next Mass Effect game reach the heights of any of those games that she's given credit to at PlayStation, I think in general people should be pretty excited and pretty happy. I would certainly take a Mass Effect that is as polished and revered as The Last of Us or Spider-Man or Uncharted or any of those franchises. So I'll wish her luck. We had another question from Master Prime on the Discord that related to this. It said, will Mass Effect 4 or The Division 3 have disc releases? I would say probably not. And if they do, I bet it's going to be kind of what they're doing with, I think it's Hi-Fi Rush from Xbox, where they're working with a third-party company who's going to handle that. Because as far as I know, like Xbox got rid of the majority of their disc release team, right? And I believe, and I can't cite it right now, but I want to say that Ubisoft has even come out and said that, you know, that's not a thing that they're probably going to be focused on for much longer, is releasing games on disc. Because it's a big cost. Like, I don't think people realize how much it costs to make those DVDs, especially for PlayStation, because they use a double layer Blu-ray disc that is pricey. It's expensive to print on, especially if more and more people are buying digital. Now, I believe there is still a really substantial difference in the percentage of people on the different platforms doing digital or not. I believe PlayStation is still a majority disc. While I believe that Xbox for a while has been a majority digital, and it's part of why some of the metrics about Xbox's sales and stuff is a little wonky, because like in the UK, they still track physical sales, and a lot of people take that pretty seriously. And obviously, PlayStation always looks like it's kicking Xbox's butt, which it probably is, but it's also a bit construed because there's a significant difference in the way that people buy their games on the different platforms. So, and then you have to factor in Game Pass too. But yeah, so I would say, if there are disc releases for games like Mass Effect 4 or The Division 3, it's probably going to be kind of boutique stuff where it's like small run, you know, probably not like what we have now, but we'll have to wait and see. Speaking of BioWare and Mass Effect, this week was Andromeda's 7th anniversary from release. That was a pretty notable thing, in my opinion, because it kind of makes you realize how long it's been since they've released a game. I believe Anthem came out the year after that, so that's been 6 years. And that means that, you know, you have to remember that, you know, Mass Effect 3 came out in 2013, and then Andromeda came out in 17. That was only a 4-year wait. You know, we're going to be looking at almost double the time of that wait between Andromeda and Dreadwolf, and we're going to be looking at 3 times, maybe more, that between Andromeda and the next Mass Effect, you know, because that's probably not coming for at least 3 or 4 years. So it's worth acknowledging, right? Like, that's a bummer. As for Andromeda, its legacy continues, for better or worse. I am not as big of, I don't like Andromeda, but I don't hate it. I think it has a lot of redeeming qualities. I think a lot of the stuff they were trying to do with Andromeda was cool. Andromeda was pretty obviously them kind of trying to remake Mass Effect 1, but in a, you know, obviously different situation. I just think that it failed in a lot of ways. And what is interesting about Andromeda is, especially in amongst the people who really liked it, maybe it was their first entry into Mass Effect, maybe they just prefer it for whatever reason, you'll see a lot of people be like, yeah, Andromeda gets a lot of hate because it had bugs when it came out and stuff, but they're all fixed now, and now people just hate it because everyone hates it. And that may be true in a very small capacity, but it's mostly not. I've only played Andromeda in the last few years. I've played it through twice, and I still do intend to do a PC playthrough. But that game is still looks awful, even for its time. It doesn't look good. Like, the models are bad. The textures are bad. A lot of the aesthetics are great. The armor, the human armor in that game looks so cool. And I really hope they continue that design language in the next game. But, like, the story is not great. The characters are not great, in my opinion. The writing in general, not great. The gameplay is fine. A lot of people, oh, you always see it. Oh, I love the combat in Andromeda. I think the combat in Andromeda blows. The gunplay is terrible. The cover system's bad. The AI is bad for friendly and enemy. The jump jets are fun. And that's what, it almost seems like everyone's like, well, the jump jets are cool, so the combat's good. Ignoring everything else about combat in a third-person game. I think it's, yeah, I don't think it's very good. I think it's kind of a bad game, but I don't hate it. I will play it when I have to. I'll definitely play it before the next game comes out, because it obviously appears that it's going to be a big factor. So still, you know, the people who made that game did their best. I have no doubt about that at all. You know, one of the people who was one of the higher ups making that game is in charge of the next game and might gamble. So, you know, you have to be a little bit positive about it, I guess. Speaking of things that you have to try to be positive about, Dragon's Dogma 2 has released. I've played more hours than I'm willing to admit already. It's been enough for me to get a feel for the game, for sure. It has a Metacritic score of 86, which you would not be able to tell on Steam, because after the game came out, Capcom activated the microtransactions, as well as anti-cheat and Denuvo and a bunch of other things that people always hate. The microtransactions has been a mixed story. The microtransactions you can get only amount to the same bonuses you could pay for the deluxe edition. So it's not that big of a deal. It's not really pay to win. I think it is shady to only put them in there after the game fully releases. I also think it's shady, or at least lazy, that reviewers add notes in their review notes for the game when they got early access. And as far as I know, no one talked about the microtransactions, probably to escape the vitriol about them. So the reviewers that reviewed this game could have talked about microtransactions. In their review guide, they were giving the details about it. And as far as I know, no one talked about it. So that's kind of a reviewer issue as well, at least in my opinion. The microtransactions themselves aren't a big deal. It's just, why? Like, come on, just don't do it. But it'll probably make them enough money that it was worth it, so whatever. The real issue with this game is the performance. The performance is bad. Like, I have a 4070 Ti, a 5800X, 32 gigs of RAM. I'm running off of a Gen 4 M.2 NVMe SSD. Like, I have a, you know, good system. Maybe not. It's like a good, it's like a solid mid-tier system, right? And this game does not play very well. And it kind of doesn't look great. Sometimes it's one of the most beautiful games I've ever seen, especially the landscapes. But then other times, you know, it's because of some of the tech they're using. It's kind of fuzzy. Things don't look very sharp. And I've been trying to figure it out. And I just think it's a game issue. There's also issues with like the animations. God, the lip sync. Oh, the lip sync is so bad in the conversations. It's like hilariously bad at times. It's weird. I like the game. I think it deserves the 86 Metacritic it had. We'll see how far that goes up or down. It's weird because it's a cool game. It's an interesting world to be in. It's fun to play. It's fun to explore. You know, trudging through the story, learning more about what's going on is cool. It seems like there are some romance systems in there and some, you know, relationship systems that you can work on and characters you can get to know. And that stuff is all cool for sure. But the game also feels like it's just like a remake of the original game because it feels old. Like the world, there's lots of people, there's lots of NPCs and things are happening kind of dynamically, but it's still just, for example, like in Baldur's Gate 3, when you hover over an item, it'll be gold or red. If it's gold, you can take it, or white, it'll be white. If it's white, it's not owned by anyone, and you can just freely take it or look through it or whatever. If it's red, it's owned by someone, and you either have to stealth and try to like steal it, or you have to like kill the person whose it is, or they'll confront you when you mess with it. It's a weird thing, but there's none of that in Dragon's Dogma 2. You can walk into every house that you find, and everything that's able to be picked up, you can just pick it up. And there's like no ownership to anything. And so it has very much that feel of like things are just placed around the world for you to find, and there's no like organic reason for them to be there. You know, like you can't just walk into the shopkeeps and take all their stuff. They still have that, like that stuff is all like unpickable, right? But like, there's just something weird about just walking in every house in a town and picking up gold and picking up supplies or weapons. And it just, it's odd. Like it just feels really old. There's a lot of parts of the game that just feel very old and not necessarily bad. To me, it's just left me a few times being like, come on, like you guys could have done more there, right? Like you guys should have done more there. But regardless of that, My biggest beef with it is the performance. I really wish it felt better to play, even though I'm still enjoying it. The microtransactions I don't really care about, but I still think it's shady. I'm going to keep playing it. I would love to finish it. I can't really tell how big of a game it is. I feel like if you golden path it, it seems like it may actually not be that long, but I could be wrong. We'll have to wait and see what people say. But I will say the deeper I've gotten into it, the more I'm appreciating, like as I've gotten all my skills and abilities, you know, hotkeyed and stuff like that, and I'm starting to like feel more powerful. I'm doing an archer class and it doesn't feel very powerful, at least not to me. I'm probably doing something wrong. But it's a really interesting game, and I'm really curious to what like the long-term outlook on it is going to be. It had almost 200,000 concurrent players after release. It's obviously very successful off the bat, and hopefully, and they already have come out, Capcom has, and acknowledged a bunch of the issues, and especially talked about performance and trying to get things to work better there. So we'll wait and see. Definitely a game I'm enjoying. Not very sure it's going to end up being like a top 2 or 3 game for me this year, but it could surprise me. Maybe it will be. I'm excited to see what happens. A couple quick stories here. Apex Legends was hacked, or at least seemingly was, during a tournament in last week. Multiple players in the tournament had hacks installed remotely onto their hardware. So they had things like wall hacks and aimbots. Suddenly, they just all of a sudden it happened to them. And it led to a bunch of people freaking out because no one knew if the Apex client was hacked, if there was a vulnerability, if Easy Anti-Cheat, which is the anti-cheat they use, was hacked, or if those individuals had been hacked. Since then, Easy Anti-Cheat has come out and said that they don't believe it was them. Apex has come out, I believe, and said the same thing. And there's been some evidence that people have pointed out that's starting to make people believe that it just so happens that a few of these people were targeted, maybe by a specific group or person, and kind of were individually hacked, who just happened to all be playing in the same tournament. One of the examples I saw was that, I guess in the hours or days leading up to this tournament, one of the streamers like verbally talked through clicking on a very suspicious download. And I remember it was, I think it was Pirate Software, the hacker developer, was talking about it and like laughing, because it seems like there's a pretty good chance at least this one individual may have just been targeted, socially engineered, and targeted specifically by someone. And let's just say that just because someone's a streamer doesn't mean they're necessarily the like smartest person on earth or the most computer literate person. And it seems like maybe these people got duped, but we'll have to wait and see what happens in the long run. And then the last couple things here, Konami revealed an update talking about how like the Metal Gear Solid Collection Volume 1 will be getting a 4K update, as well as some other adjustments and bug fixes. And the Metal Gear Solid 3 Delta, which was formerly known as Snake Eater, the remake is kind of a test case. And if that goes well, they may remake more of the classic game. So I never played Metal Gear Solid 3. I played the original game. I never played 2 or 3. I did play 4 and 5. And so I'm actually really curious about this remake, because I would love to play it. I know it's some people's favorite one. So Kojima not being involved doesn't feel right, but since he's been kind of smelling his farts lately, I guess I'm a little more willing to give this a chance. And then the last story, Margot Robbie is going to be producing a The Sims movie. And that's what I'm going to leave you with this week. So thank you so much for listening to this episode. Please consider supporting my content on my Patreon or the other platforms I talked about before by checking out all the links in the description of the show. That is all I have for this one. So until next time.